Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Good evening, everybody, from the still not quite spring Midwest. Last night, I never did posted on my Facebook page, but some of you heard me talking last night about the hail that we had, golf ball size hail, here in the Midwest. And tonight we're getting 1 to 3 inches of snow. So happy April. Everybody hearing me okay in the chat room? I see a shrugging of the shoulders out there. I want to make sure my mic's not locked off. Okay, well, I'll do a few housekeeping things right now. One of them is, okay, everybody's hearing me now, great. First, I'm going to read, for those of you just listening online who don't get a chance to see the page, tonight my show is called My Own Prison. And what my show notes say is prison, a place or condition of confinement, restraint, or captivity. I'm not referring to breaking the law or jail time, but those self-imposed feelings that cause us to become prisoners in our own minds. What are they, and what can we do to rediscover the keys of the kingdom? Freedom equals choice. Let's set our minds free. This show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics. Sometimes survivors share their experiences, strengths, and hope. We discover useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. Stop in, tune in, and call in. This is a we program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we have a featured guest, and other nights we discuss a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join in the discussion. Tonight would be one of those nights. As I mentioned before, self-imposed prison often has to do with a series of not productive feelings that get us stuck or caught in a bad place. And some of those feelings, little list of them here that I'm going to run through tonight: fear, shame, guilt, resentment, righteous indignation, self-pity, and loneliness. And I know that when I was first recovering from my brain trauma, I felt all of these things, and these feelings can still gang up on me from time to time under the right circumstances, as I imagine they can with many of us. And in a sense, when I get buried in any one or combination of these feelings, I create my own prison, because the things that are fueling the fire are not paying rent in the playground of my mind. They're occupying my mind. And when I'm focused on negative things like this, then I'm not able to remember the gratitude and to see the beauty in life, which is what I think I got a second crack at life for. And so tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about the problem, which are some definitions and some ideas, personal experience about these feelings I just mentioned. And then we're going to talk about some of the solutions. And then I'm going to have you share some of the same. So we'll start out with fear. Fear is an emotion induced by a perceived threat which causes entities to quickly pull far away from it and usually hide. It is a basic survival mechanism occurring in response to a specific stimulus, such as pain or the threat of danger. Fear is often a function of not getting something we want or losing something we have. Fear can trigger anxiety, depression, and the infamous fight or flight response, a condition that when sustained can lead to numerous physical as well as emotional negative health conditions. And that's true of many of these negative emotions that I'm going to talk about. All of these, if we dwell in them, can and will lead to, at the very least, emotional issues, and at the worst, emotional and some pretty serious physical issues. Now, I remember fear initially after my ruptured brain aneurysm, because I was healthy, had been healthy. I was 35 years old at the top of my game, and boom, all of a sudden the rug of life got pulled out from under me. I had a zipper head, which those of you who are able to see the program page can get a little glimpse of. And my life from that day forward was going to be changed. In the beginning, the first year or two, I would feel the wiring reconnecting. A lot of you have talked about this too. I felt that, maybe not a very good sound effect, but kind of like when you rub two wires together, when you're going to fix something under the hood of the car. And I would feel that in my head. I would feel deep pains in my head, throbbing sensations in my head, some visual problems in my head, and I would feel fear. And the more fear I felt, the less sleep I would get, the more tense I would get, and probably the more crabby I would get, because I was missing sleep, and I was, had my blinders on. I was auto-focused into that fear. And later, 17 years later, as a matter of fact, when I had never met another survivor and chose to write my book, and the magic of the internet highway took it all over the world, I started getting contacted from a lot of people who had a variety of different types of brain trauma. Some of them had ruptured aneurysms like myself, some AVM, some traumatic brain injuries, and just about everything in between. And one of the first groups that I stumbled into was a Brain Aneurysm Foundation group. And I started reading the posts, and people were talking about their second and their third and these periodic angiograms that they had to go in and have testing to make sure that they didn't have other aneurysms brewing in their head. And frankly, I fell through the medical cracks back in my day. I had a visiting neurosurgeon. My internist misdiagnosed me, so I dismissed him immediately and never saw him again. Because I could walk and talk, my neurosurgeon saw me for a couple follow-ups and cut me loose. And so I never went to any therapy, wasn't referred to a neurologist, never had any kind of follow-up testing, wasn't recommended or not recommended, it wasn't mentioned. And so naively, for all that time, that 17 years, until I stumbled into that very first room, I thought that I had gotten broken and they fixed it. And I had some residuals that they wouldn't, my new internist wouldn't really validate, referred me to what I not so affectionately call the shrink bone pile, when these were in fact physical problems that came out of my ruptured aneurysm that I was having emotional feelings about. But instead of acknowledging the physical damage, they just wanted me to go and deal with the emotional reactions. And that fear got rekindled in me, at least as far as the aneurysm went, 17 years later when I stumbled into this room and read all of these stories, because I thought that I had been a one-shot pony, that I had been broken, I was fixed, I had some residuals that I'd learned to deal with or not, and that I would go merrily along my way. And then I slip into this room as a result of writing a book, and I'm reading story after story after story of people all over the world who had additional or multiple aneurysm situations. And boy, that fear, I locked in on that fear in that 17th year like I had locked into it the very first year. And it was a paralyzing kind of fear that I couldn't seem to get unstuck about. I kept focusing on it because the trauma had been so bad the first time around. The shock, the trauma, all of those things had been so scary to me that the thought of that happening again was almost more than I could bear. And the more stories I'd read, it was kind of like when you watch a car accident. You know, you really want to turn away, but there's something that makes you, a lot of people anyway, says Psych 101, that will lock onto that car accident and they just can't take their eyes away. And that's kind of what the fear was about when it came to the possibility of another aneurysm. And then I read the different protocols for now, what they are right now, because they are in fact practicing medicine out there. So a protocol today might not be there 5 years, 10 years, 5 minutes, 50 years from now. They might change that protocol because more information is always being discovered. But now, apparently, the protocol is if they find another aneurysm and it's under a certain size, they will have a watch and see attitude. And if it's over a certain size, there's one of a handful of procedures now. There was really only two, get a clip, a craniotomy and a clip or die back when I had mine. But now, a couple of years later, they had come up with the coil. And in the last 2 years, they've come up with a couple of other procedures. And they tried a couple others in between. But in any case, that fear, if left unchecked, can really create a prison in our mind when we lock on that fear like a little gerbil on a wheel and can't seem to let go of it. And so that would be one instance and one emotion that can certainly throw us into a mental prison. Shame. Shame is another one I've heard some of you talk about. Shame is a painful emotion resulting from an awareness of having done something dishonorable, unworthy, degrading. Feelings of humiliation or distress caused by the consciousness of wrong or foolish behavior, real or perceived. Shame is an emotion in which the self is perceived as defective, unacceptable, or fundamentally damaged. Shame is often confused with guilt, which is a related but distant emotion, which a specific behavior is viewed as unacceptable or wrong, rather than the entire self. So again, that's a specific behavior is what guilt refers to, and we'll go on to that in a minute. But shame is a total self-image or image of self that we see as being defective. And people who experience traumatic events are prone to shame, particularly if they blame themselves for the event. Shame can be a particularly problematic emotion because it is associated with a desire to hide, disappear, or even die. That's from a section in Psychology Today. Now, in the case of shame, and again, I'll use my own examples because I'm going to invite you folks in to share some examples of your own later on or make some comments. But all I can do effectively is share my own experience, strength, and hope. And every now and then, share a third party example. But in this case, shame. I felt that a couple of times. I had some abusive situations coming up. And like a lot of people in those situations, when they're young, particularly, you have a tendency to blame yourself for those things happening, that somehow it must be your fault. A lot of people that I know have parents that are divorced, and that's a good example of it. You know, there's no way that a kid can understand that two grown-ups just can't play well with each other, that it really has nothing to do with them, the child. It has to do with the inability of two grown-ups to make a commitment, be responsible, follow it through, and make it work, like their vows said. But somehow a child will misguidedly take that mantle on and feel shame, like this event was their fault. In the case of brain injuries, I know a lot of times I've heard stories both in real life in a recovery forum as well as online in some of the chat rooms about people who had experienced their traumatic brain injuries as a result of perhaps an accident where they were drinking and driving, or perhaps using some kind of a drug that caused a problem in the brain, a brain bleed or some form of accident that caused the traumatic brain injury. And so once that traumatic brain injury sets in and a person has the realization that their own behavior was something that contributed to a lifetime change, feelings of shame can put them in their own prison. Same thing can happen on the other side of the coin, and that's when a person is recovering from a brain injury where they may begin self-medicating. And then they wind up with an addictive disorder or perhaps a second brain injury or some other kind of malady. And again, whether that's a stroke, an AVM, an aneurysm, a TBI, when somebody is self-medicating and it gets out of control, you just never know what kind of things can happen. And so shame is a feeling that a lot of us have experienced if we've been in an abuse situation, been involved in an addictive disorder, or even in the case, again, I'll defer to my own brain injury. And again, the reason I do this is I try to give my own examples of these things, not because mine are special or unique, but just to kind of give you something to track along with so you'll feel free to share yours later when we get to the discussion part. But I know one of the things I felt shame about is that I went back to work, right, for quite a few years right after I had my brain injury because I wasn't, first of all, it was taking me a while to become aware that some of these residuals that I mentioned so much I don't like to keep doing this, so I'm going to be brief for any newcomer who's out there, but short-term memory pretty much wiped, emotional mood swings, what I call full basket syndrome, that if too many things are coming my way at once, too much new information, I can't process as fast as I used to, and so that can cause me to kind of unravel into those emotional swings, or they can put me into a freeze, a brain freeze, where I can't really function much at all. I was living in a world of post-it notes. Because short-term memory is one of them, I'm forgetting a laundry list of the others. Sensory overload, too much noise, too many conversations going on around me, and an inability to focus, things like that. At first, I wasn't admitting that those things were even going on. I was just saying, I'm just a little tired, or I was rationalizing or intellectualizing. And that's one thing they say about people that are, now anybody can do those things, and I'm not blowing my own horn or anything, but, you know, they do say that people with some amount of intelligence, anyone can intellectualize, rationalize, do those types of adjectives, but smart people are even better at it because they have a bigger deck to draw from when it comes to selling themselves a bill of goods. And I was in sales, and we talk about this on the program. Just because I had a brain injury didn't all of a sudden make me dumb. I still had my brains. They just weren't working the way that they were before, and I started making mistakes eventually in my lifelong career, and I wasn't getting caught at them yet, but I had that fear, number one, that number one imprisoning emotion that I was talking about. The fear kicked in, and the shame kicked in, because I thought I knew all these things, and I had my darn aneurysm, I had my surgery, I went back to work, I'm a ways down the road. Now, why can't I process things that came simple to me before? Why are they difficult to me now? Why, when I'm in a hurry, maybe trying to zip off an email to a client, am I transposing my letters and putting the wrong word? I have intention toward a certain word, and I'm typing a totally unrelated word into the spot. And I felt, even though I wasn't talking about it out loud, I felt a large sense of shame, again, about something that wasn't my fault in this case. It wasn't anybody's fault. It was just a new state of reality that I hadn't adjusted to yet, and I felt ashamed. I felt ashamed, like I was less of a person than I had been before, that I was less worthy than I had been before, to be making the kind of money I was, to be living the way that I was. I felt like a fake, because I felt like I had righteously earned it before, and now I felt like I had on a mask and was being something that I wasn't. There's a coin that we get in one of the recovery groups I'm involved in, and on the back of it, it says, "To thine own self be true." And at that time, I was not doing that. And for that reason, I felt a lot of shame. So again, fear and shame are two of the emotions that can cause us to start erecting our own prison that cuts us off from the freedoms that we have. And I'm going to talk about the positive after I rattle off a couple more of these here, and what we do about these things. Wasn't trying to do a downer show tonight. In fact, I was going to do a show on how people spend down to qualify for Medicaid, but to be honest with you, I didn't feel like it. And part of it had to do with shame, as a matter of fact, and fear, because I know all about the spend down part, the insurance products that people can buy to spend down to Medicaid, but I had called an independent living center in our area. It's called the League of Human Dignity, and it is kind of related to the Health and Human Services. Now, every state calls it something different. And this guy started explaining to me a bureaucratic nightmare that people have to go through that had a lot of math, because they make different calculations of how much you can make in every different state. And I tell you, while I wrote down the concept, and I will do a show in the future about it, my eyes were rolling around in my head, and this was one of those instances, like I talked about a minute ago, as a matter of fact, where in my old incarnation, I would have been able to whip those things through my brain, process them, and spit them out like a BB gun, but I was stuck. I was confused. There was a couple of different areas. First, that bureaucratic nightmare paper jungle and the different contingency rules, and it's a federal law, but each of the states handles it different, and then all the different math calculations. I got up today, and I've had a hard couple of days. I feel like I might be coming down with something. The weather's been icky, and I thought, you know, I just don't feel like doing that topic, and I hadn't posted the show notes yet, so I didn't have to. And so I decided, I thought about my own prison. There's a song by a group called Creed that some of you might know. And the name of that song is My Own Prison. And I had heard it today. And I was thinking about, now isn't that interesting? It's one of those songs, I really like it, but he does scream a lot when he sings it. And so to tell you the truth, unless I specifically looked up the lyrics, which I didn't, I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly what he was saying, but I got the concept about my own prison, and I thought, how do I build my own prison? A place that shields me from the light of the spirit, a place that confines me, a place that robs me of my freedom. And I thought, negative emotions. Either an intensity on one negative emotion or a culmination of several of them unchecked, those are one of the ways. Yes, Sarah, they're a band called Creed, and they have a song called I think it's My Own Prison. It's something just like that. I might have paraphrased. I might have missed one of those words when I made up my title for the show, but that's the gist of it, and I'll look it up when I go into my iPad in a minute. And I love them too, and that's why I was listening to it when I got this concept. So, again, as I read before, just the end of shame, and then I'm going to move on. People who experience, they say in psychology today specifically, traumatic events are prone to shame, Shame can be a particularly problematic emotion because it is associated with the desire to hide, disappear, or even die. I'm not going to belabor that. I might let some of you share your stories, but I know that I was very happy when I lived alone for a long time after my brain injury, not immediately after. Those of you that read my book know that I took a couple-year departure. But after that, I went a decade and lived alone. And I could hide that way because I could go out and perform to the best of my ability, and I could act as if I was the old me outside of my home. And then I could come home and go through the emotions. I could go through the fatigue of how much energy it took for me to fake being Kim instead of just admitting that there was a new Kim, that I was going to have to, the four A's, that I was going to have to become aware of, that I was going to have to take, make acceptance of it, take action, and adapt to. I just wasn't there yet. I was doing it a little at a time. So when I was reading about shame, it talked about guilt being a distant cousin. Shame is a state of being, a perception that our whole self is something that's undesirable or unworthy or defective. Guilt is a slice. Guilt and its handmaiden shame can paralyze or even catalyze one into action. Appropriate guilt can function as social glue, spurring one to make reparation for wrongs. Excessive rumination about one's failures, however, is a surefire recipe for resentment and depression. And so guilt is about an event, not about a person. And there's a lot of things that we can feel guilty about. Again, in my illness, I felt guilty that I wasn't being honest with people about what was really going on and why. You can see how many of these prison-building emotions lock together. Why did I feel guilty? I wasn't being honest about my own personal business of not being able to keep up. Well, fear. Fear that I wouldn't be accepted. Shame that perhaps now I was defective. So there goes the guilt. So you can see da-da-da-da-da. These things go down the line and they stack up separately, but they also lock together. And that's where the keys and the walls to the prison get built. The next one was resentment. A while back, I did a show called Drinking the Poison. And the catchphrase in that show, and you can look back in the archive, it was called Drinking the Poison. Pardon me, I don't have the date, but drinking the poison, hoping the other person will die. Resentment is an accumulation of unresolved angers. While anger can be a healthy way to express an appropriate response, uncontrolled anger can lead to broken relationships, high blood pressure, obesity, mental disturbances, heart problems, and a general sense of what I call dis-ease. I know, well, anyway, the word disease, if you break that word down and split it in half, you have the word dis-ease, and that means that you're not in a state of ease. And resentment will certainly put you there. If you're feeling happy, you know, if you're feeling good, then you have a general sense of ease in your life. But if you're building your own prison and you have fear, shame, guilt, and resentment, then you're going to be feeling a large sense of dis-ease. And it would only make sense that when you're having that feeling, you're going to be creating that condition, and that is a physical disease, whether it's short or long. To get there, you will get there. You know, you'll get there to that heart attack. You'll get there to those gastro problems. You'll get there to those migraines. So resentment is really something that we just can't afford to keep and to hang on to. It's like carrying a weight on our shoulders on top of whatever else is going on in our life. We're carrying around a 50-pound boulder. And so my suggestion on resentments, if resentments are in fact unresolved angers, then it's good to deal with anger as it comes up and never let that pile of angers fester into the big resentment and that state of dis-ease that in one way or another will probably eventually kill you. Another one is righteous indignation. Now, on righteous indignation, that means retribution, retributive justice, anger and contempt, combined with a feeling that it's one's right to feel that way, anger without guilt. Indignation is anger aroused by something unjust, mean, or unworthy. The Standard Dictionary describes indignation as a feeling involving anger mingled with contempt or disgust. That comes from a paper by Craig L. Adams called Righteous Indignation. And a quote from Leonard Ravenhill says, "The self-righteous seldom apologize." And I can read you a little something by a therapist called Kelly, and I found this site, Kelly Vision, and found this a pretty interesting piece, if I can locate it here. I'm going to give you an example of self-righteous indignation by reading you a piece that she said. And listen closely to the dynamics that go on here and think about your own life and when these sorts of things might have came up to you. Now, mind you, this gal is a therapist, so she's going to give an example. A client of mine came into my office fuming about her boss at work and how he was mishandling an account by giving a client preferential treatment. The client made a point of telling him that he was mishandling the account and did not accept his explanation as being valid. She went over his head and complained to his boss. When I asked how the mishandling of this account affected her, she couldn't really answer. She had no interaction with the client. It didn't affect her clients, and she would not be held responsible for the account. She then continued to rail against the unfairness of the preferential treatment and her need to expose it. She denied ulterior motives or her long and conflictual relationship with the boss. She denied her wish to see him punished and stated she was unaware of any possible fallout from this action. She reported telling the boss's superior that she did not mean to be a tattletale, but that she needed to know if this was right or not. When I asked her what her gut told her about whether it was right or not, she admitted that she already knew it was wrong and her boss's explanation was flimsy. But she continued to insist that she had to go over his head to find out, quote-unquote, for sure, whether she was right or not. She was completely surprised when a few weeks later the boss attempted to have her transferred to another office. She had completely sabotaged herself with her boss in her need to be self-righteous. This is a pattern she has replicated in many offices prior to this. Her self-righteous intolerance of the foibles of others and her need to go confront superiors about them makes her a target or a scapegoat. She eventually is let go or fired from every job, yet she continues to maintain this behavior. She had rather be right than be employed. Now, that's a good example of self-righteous indignation, and the way that this therapist finished it, she would rather be right than employed. One of the phrases that I use from time to time is, well, more than time to time, quite a few times, a phrase that I use is this the hill you want to die on? First of all, is it any of my business in the first place? Or am I just wanting to make someone else accountable when it has nothing to do with me personally? I used to be a real cause person earlier in my life when I was in my 20s. I saw all of this stuff going on out in the world, and it was unfair and it was unjust, and I wanted to be in the middle, controlling and instructing and letting people know what the right way to do things was. And time again, I was disappointed or disbanded groups of friends, kicked me out. Nobody really asked my opinion or wanted to hear my opinion. And yet I felt that I needed to be the corrective force of the universe that called everybody on everything, whether it directly affected me or not. And as I got older, and after my brain injury particularly, fatigue, you know, chronic fatigue plagued me. And I realized one day, wow, I just don't have the energy or the inclination to do that anymore. I just don't want to go there anymore. And so when I feel that blood pressure rise, I have to say to myself, is this the hill I want to die on? And it is just a phrase, but it could be a literal phrase because, you know, I hear when you've had an aneurysm before, that you're more likely to have another. And high blood pressure is a really bad thing for people with heart condition, circulatory condition, probably lots of other conditions, brain aneurysm conditions. And so, you know, when you're emotionally into self-righteous indignation, you know, the blood pressure goes up, the heart starts pumping, you know, your tiger is coming out of the corner. And when that happens, I've got to say to myself, is it really that important? Does it really affect me? Is it really my business? And is this the hill I want to die on? Someday it might be. Someday there might be a cause that's so important to me that I'm willing to let my health be threatened over it, let my life be threatened over it, alienate all the relationships in my life over it, but not now. I can't think of a hill I want to die on right now. I can't think of one thing I wouldn't walk away from before I would let that happen. And so that's an example of self-righteous indignation by a therapist. And I thought that she gave a good encapsulized story of self-righteous indignation that got the point across. Self-pity. Self-pity is a self-indulgent dwelling on one's own sorrows or misfortunes. And I have another quick reading for you. This one came off of, this one is from Deepak Chopra. And a lady asks him a question. How do I get over the feeling of not being good enough? Why do I sometimes feel sorry for myself because I don't get what I think or I need or want? How can I expand my mind and grow into a better person? How can I learn to stay in the moment, take responsibility for all the choices in my life up to this point? I've read several books and meditations, yet sometimes I slip back. Do you have any suggestions? And he says, you posted several questions, all seemingly different, yet connected to a central issue. The issue is dependency. Self-pity is the opposite of self-esteem. It arises because you feel no one will lift you out of your difficulties. With no one stronger, older, wiser, and kinder to help you, there's a tremendous sense of lack. You cannot find the same strength that these rescuers have, or you imagine them to have, and the ache of not being enough is felt as self-pity or poor me. The answer to feeling poor inside is to gather some riches. He says, I don't know about your past, but somehow you maintain a childlike wish to be dependent, and this is keeping you bereft. It is also denying you a world of inner riches. A person who is rich inside feels as if she is enough. She is strong enough and good enough. She can trust her instincts and feel secure in her choices. She takes responsibility for every victory as well as any failures along the way. So, he says these are some things that you may want to consider and to write them down. Some of you might want to grab a pen if you think this is one of your issues. He says, you may not feel you have these inner riches, but you can begin to accumulate them, Write down each quality and consider how to gain it. Your list might look something like this. Being enough. And by the way, these are solutions. Let me back up just 1 minute. The last negative emotion that I wrote down, and I'm sure there's a lot of others, these just came off the top of my head. Again, they were fear, shame, guilt, resentment, self-righteous indignation, self-pity, and my last one is loneliness. Loneliness, we all get that. I ain't going to spend a lot of time on it. Loneliness is the state of being alone in solitary isolation or without companions. So, before I go on and read you something else, if I want to build my own prison, if I want to deprive myself of the light of the Spirit and the riches that the God, as I understand him, was going to allow me to have by having a second chance at life when I was at death's door, then me dwelling in negative emotion, such as fear, shame, guilt, resentment, self-righteous indignation, self-pity, and loneliness, are going to cause me to put walls around me that block the light of the Spirit, that keep me lonely, and that keep me steeping in these emotions. And suddenly I become a spectator to my second life instead of a participant in my new life. And that's part of the process to me of letting go of the old me and accepting that there's going to be a new me, and the actions I'm going to need to take to come to the new me, and the new ways I'm going to think to be able to embrace the new me, and to know that that's okay. And so his list says, one of the things that I need to build my self-esteem is being enough. How many of us feel like we're enough right here as we sit or stand today? Whatever's going on in one compartment of our life doesn't encompass our entire life. It's like a pie. One slice of the pie doesn't represent the entire pie. If I've got one thing going in a way that isn't the way I want it to go, does that mean my whole life is not good? No, it means one issue in my life is good. But overall, do I feel like I'm enough? Am I trying to reach for my higher self? Do I make mistakes? Heck yeah. But am I constantly striving? My show is called Recovery Now. It's not called Recovered Yesterday. Recovery Now to me means it's a process I'm going to be going through throughout the rest of my life. Recovery Now means that I am working on recovery now and one day at a time for the rest of the days that I live. It doesn't mean that it doesn't mean a lot of other things. Trusting my choices. I need to take a risk sometimes. You know, a lot of us will sit on the sidelines of life and we're not willing to try something because we're afraid we won't be good enough, we'll look silly, who would be interested in what I have to say or what I'm doing. And it's just easier for me to sit isolated where I'm safe and nobody can take a pot shot at me than it is to get up off the bench, get out in the playing field and try some new things, build my own destiny, and start tearing down those walls. Take responsibility. If I make mistakes, I need to take responsibility for those mistakes, and I need to talk to somebody about them, or I need to rectify them if that's what I can do. I need to practice feeling self-confident by looking for the good and not focusing on the bad within myself. I need to handle a difficult situation in an acceptable way. If somebody blows off steam at me, instead of being retaliatory and trying to chop them down an inch lower than they chop me, if I walk away, that's a victory. Because they say if you lay down with dogs, you'll get up with fleas. And I used to like to have competitions that way. Not so much anymore. I don't want the fleas. I don't want to roll with the dogs with fleas. I want to run with the pedigrees, and that's what I see that we have a lot of here. And folks, I'm going to explain to you real quick. I'm going to wind up my topic, and tonight I booked the show for an hour. As most of you know, these live shows go to archives, and they become on demand where you get to hear the whole show. Real quick, like, you've got about 9 minutes to dial in to 424-243-9540. And I encourage you to do that because I want to spend the next hour hearing about you and your challenges in this area. You can either Skype into the show or, again, call 424-243-9540. I'm going to finish up my topic in the show like I normally do for the live audience. And then in overtime, I want to talk to you guys about your comments or your own personal examples of the things that I've talked about. If nobody wants to call in and do that for overtime, then I'm just going to play some music. I hope that some of you will call in and talk about your prisons, how you've experienced them, the keys that you've used to set yourself free. And I've got about 5 more minutes that I'm going to just finish my topic right here by giving you the solutions. I don't want to leave you live listeners that are going to be off the phone in a couple of minutes. I don't want to leave you with the problem. So I was reading off some of these solutions real quick. I'm going to get through those. Again, dial 424-243-9540. That doesn't mean you have to stay. You can hang up whenever you want to. But if you don't dial in about the next 7 minutes, you won't have a chance to get back on, although you will be able to listen to the rest of this show in its entirety on demand. One more time, 424-243-9540. Taking responsibility, feeling confident, handling a difficult situation in a different way, finding a way to shine. That means go out, try a bunch of things. Don't worry about whether you're good at them, whether that you're best at them. Don't be competitive. Find something you enjoy doing. And when you find something that brings joy to your heart, you're going to have found a way to shine. And in that, you're going to stand up and feel respect for yourself. A couple of other quick things I'm going to rattle off to you that are solutions that I have found, and I don't have time. I'll do it in overtime, maybe. Pray. If you're feeling like you're stuck in this prison due to some of the accumulation of these negative emotions and you can't find a way to break down those walls, then ask the God of your understanding. Pray for help getting out of your self-imposed prison by praying for the strength and courage to meet life on life's terms, help those walls get broken down, and be able to move forward in a productive, happy, service-oriented way for the rest of your life. Distract. Do things that make you happy. And don't focus on those negative feelings. Observe them. Know that you're having them. You know, I'm feeling this, that, or the other. I'm feeling shame, fear, self-doubt, da-da-da-da-da-da. Observe it, but then distract. Go off and help someone else. Do something fun. Get your mind off the broken record. Engage in life. I said that. Go out and do something fun. Get off the sidelines. Actually participate. That's why God gave you your life. Talk to someone else if something's on your mind. A lot of times the things that we keep bottled up are the things that will lead to building the walls to the prison. One way we can deal with, well, angers, for example, before they become resentments, is to talk to someone else, a trusted good friend, a paid psychologist, whatever you need to do. Along with talking is writing. You can write an angry letter that you never mail. You can journal. You can write a story. You can write a poem. There's all kinds of things you can write. Some of the people in my chat room, huge on exercise. They go blow off steam by getting their endorphins up. And then acronyms. And maybe I'll get to the acronyms and talk to you about those on another show. Actually, I can do some quick ones. Make up your own acronyms too, but here's a couple of mine. HALT, H-A-L-T, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If I'm any one or combination of those things, then my prison walls are going to seem a lot worse and a lot higher, and everything is going to seem worse in my life if I am indulging in HALT. Ego, E-G-O, means easing God out. In my particular case, and I'm not saying everybody's got to do this, but I know that when I relied on myself only, I got myself in a lot of trouble. So I remember the acronym EGO, because when I'm getting too big, I am easing God out. Fear is another one. Fear, F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real. We'll talk about that sometime. And the old KISS. And I don't like part of it because it has to do with self-esteem, so I call it Keep It Simple, Sweetie. With that, I want to thank our sponsor, Gordon Johnson at pbilaw.com. If you have any litigation issues involved in your brain injury, do get a hold of Gordon Johnson and he can help you out. Want to thank Craig Cecilia, the one who originated Brain Injury Radio. I want to thank all the listeners. You have a few seconds to dial in for Last Call for Overtime, where I'll get your input, 424-243-9540. And yes, I see someone in the chat room. They haven't given me the 90-second cue yet, so I will go on and say, I don't use Keep It Simple, Stupid, because stupid to me is a self-esteem undermining phrase. And I guess, you know, one of the things back in that list I was giving you is if you want to have a friend. And I'm not talking to you in the chat room doing that. I'm referring back to my own notes of the things that build the prison for me. And that's, you know, when it comes to self-righteous indignation and shame and some of those things, if I want to have a friend, I have to learn to be a friend. And so, you know, I can get angry, but I'm going to make mistakes and people are going to get angry at me sometimes. And somewhere in there, I have to find forgiveness. But I got to say, it is not always easy. And I got a correction in the chat room. No. It is Keep It Stupidly Simple. Thank you. Great. That is good. I'm sorry I missed that. Wrong reading glasses. But that is another incarnation, and I encourage you to do that, just like he did. Make up an acronym of your own, because for those of us that have memory problems, a lot of times we hear a theory or we hear something that resonates with us and carries us along in recovery. However, we forget it. And so if we can remember acronyms we've heard or build acronyms of our own, then that is going to help us. That's going to be a trigger or a light switch that's going to help us remember things that we need to remember to stay on the track of recovery. So again, I want to thank all of you listeners that have been here. I encourage you to call in 424-243-9540. We have 60 seconds, and I am going to end the show in the usual way with something I believe we all have, and that is a guardian angel. This song is by Leah West. I encourage you to check out her site at leahwest.com. And for those of you that choose to stay, I'll see you on the other side of 51 seconds in overtime. For those of you that don't, thanks so much for joining me. Good night.
God replies, yes, it's
And we're officially into overtime, so it looks like we have a couple people that'll keep chatting in the chat room. Maybe some people out there in listener land, and a couple of people here on the dashboard. I want to say good night to Sarah, to Stephen, to our guests, and Jenny, who was here earlier. And now I will take people in order of how long they've been holding, and there's only a couple of you, so you'll both be on in just a moment. But I believe this is Les Paul.
It is.
Hello.
And you might have seen a phone number change or something that you know of mine, because I was on my cell phone out with my dog, and I turned on my indoor phone at the same time, because I know the time was running out to call in on that one. So I hung up the cell phone, if that makes any sense. But I got in time.
It was actually just the area code. It might have been somebody else from your state.
Well, it was a great topic tonight. And say the topic. I went blank as I went to say what I was going to say.
It was your own prison, building your own prison.
That's what I was trying to talk about. You know, a lot of us feel like we're in a prison, trapped inside of our head and can't get out. And, man, that was me for a very long time. When I heard that, I said, wow, she's hitting home with me hard time, because that's how it used to be. It felt like everything bad that could happen times 10 was happening over and over and over. And no matter how hard I tried to dig out, it continued to get worse. And I started just believing in myself, and my mother would just keep saying, do not quit believing in yourself. That's, you've got to do that. Believe in God. Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. I'm not going to give up on you, boy. Things like that. And it just slowly started sinking in, even though I barely knew who I was. I mean, I was listening to a lot of what you were saying, and it just hit home. So thank you for doing such a wonderful show tonight.
Well, thank you so much. Like I said, I was going to do another topic, and I just wasn't in the mood for it tonight. I'm going to unmute Keith Anthony, too. You know, I've got to say, before you say anything, Keith Anthony, and then you can have the floor, and thank you, Les Paul, and I've got you both unmuted. There's only the two of us.
Okay.
Is that, Keith Anthony, you will have to forgive me, because if you were here from the beginning of the show, and I thank you for that, and you heard me say the topic I was going to do, but when I heard about the bureaucratic nightmare and the math that was involved with doing all these calculations, my eyes were rolling on my head, and I about fell on the floor and was pounding in agony that I just didn't even want to do that topic. And so I said I was going to let the person holding the longest, and I had the numbers turned around, so you guys were about 30 seconds different, and it was not by intent. It was by my poor math skills. I am a much more...
Take the floor.
Yes,
yeah.
Keith,
well, I have to tell you, Kim, I'm very upset. I think I'm being deliberately singled out. It's really
you
not
know,
funny.
I do think that there's a conspiracy.
I'm not having
Keith,
a good time. I can't tell you. Don't let this laughter fool you. I can't tell you how upset I am about this.
Well, I know. When I laugh, it's actually something evil. That's the case.
Mike, anytime, and... Or is it speakers I should be? Am I hearing the mic or the speaker? I guess I'm hearing the speakers. It's good to hear both of you anytime, and fabulous show you've been doing, Kim. And I'm not in a competition here. I'm happy to be here, because I know it didn't have to be this way. So, and we all know that we're lucky to be here, because it didn't have to be this way, did it?
Yes.
Because we've all been very sick. And so I'm blessed for that. I'm blessed to be on this show. I'm not too sure I've got too much to say at four minutes past four in the morning, but prisons. Yeah, I've been in a prison most of my life, and I didn't create it, and I didn't have any way to get out of it because when people are determined, I mean, you imagine getting put in a real prison, you can't get out because the people who put you in are determined to keep you in, and unfortunately for some of us, and certainly in my case, that the people who put me in that prison were determined to keep me in. And I didn't have the tools to get out until very recently. And the people that put me in that prison still tried to keep me in it. and they get very distressed with me now because they know I'm out and I'm not going to go back in, not for anybody. So life is much better now because I'm older and wiser and I've got the tools to pick the lock to get me out. But when I was a kid, certainly it was not possible because I was beaten every day to make sure I comply with the negative input I was getting.
Yeah,
I was beaten
by teachers,
parents, by my brothers, by the kids at school, even the girls used to beat me.
Wow.
But
I'm
telling you this to distress you or to impress you, but to impress upon you that if you can hold it together and keep it together, even though it might be years, and I think that from childhood to my 50s, I think we'd accept that was quite a few years, just keep it together until you get through it. Because
I think that's amazing about you.
You do get through it in the end. And there have been times when I've found it very hard to keep going, found it very hard to make it through the day. And sometimes I would be so depressed. But I never felt, although I would get depressed, I never felt sorry for myself. I sat there and I knew it. I felt bad. I didn't know why or what I could do about it, but I knew I would get through it. And that kept me going. So thank you for that compliment, Les Paul, by the way. I did hear it. And you just got to stick to it. And I did mention in the chat box earlier on that there is no negative and positive, not in my life, that there's only results and moving forward. So you replace those two words, negative and positive, with results and moving forward, because even negative stuff moves you forwards unless you quit.
You're right.
So we mustn't quit. We mustn't quit. And I know, Kim, you didn't quit because you've been through such terrible things with your injuries.
Yeah.
And so have you, Les Paul. We've all heard the story of that operation they've done on you. And you managed, you were in a bad place, and you managed to pull it together, keep it together, keep going. And,
I listen to you guys' stories. I feel the same exact way about you, really.
Thank you. And I think you're marvelous. And I think that you're very much, you demonstrate to me, Les Paul, what I've always realized ever since my brain injury. You demonstrate to me more than most, Les Paul, that our intellect, our mind, our conscious self, our cognitive thought exists outside of our body. Because from what you've told me of your brain, I'm surprised that you can speak to me. So
I am too.
Isn't that
really
the truth?
That tells me that our mind is outside of our body, and that the brain is just an interface which is very adaptive and very clever at making do and helping us to channel those thoughts into our body to communicate with the world.
That's
so
right.
That's my explanation for that. And wonderful. I think that our brain is built with multiple redundancy, so it can deal with a lot of crap before it chokes.
And I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and they call that plasticity now because they've realized that, because they, for many, many years they told us that if you don't use it, you lose it, and the brain is dying all the time. But I don't think that's true, because the more you focus and believe, and this is a hypnotist talking, the more you focus and believe that your mind is developing and growing, the more it does that, and it develops and
I really believe you. I think you're right on the money.
What's that?
Let me close all my
TV
windows.
TV going?
It is. I'm sorry about that. I think it's an advert or something that suddenly came up on my screen. I've had those open for hours because I wanted to go back to watch some videos on them. Now I've had to close them. I've lost them. Darn it. Oh, well, never mind.
Uh-oh. Well, we know what you'll be doing for the rest of the morning.
look through your cookies and see if you can find it.
I can go through the history list. That'll be okay. But I'll have to go
Don't
back.
Don't lose your cookies, though.
I lost my cookies years ago, I tell you. I've never been the same.
Can I share something with you guys?
Yes.
I met with a group today that really made me feel positive and excited. It's a group called Champions Made Through Adversity. I hope I said it right. Champions Made Through Adversity. I was at work today, and I had forgotten all about it. I just got there, and they were all walking in. I forgot I was supposed to open up the thing.
Oh, gosh.
Someone that works in our office wasn't able to be there today, and she asked me if I would do it for her. And I remembered, and I said, oh, boy, I got to take off and get there. And as I walked in, they were all coming in. And some of them are military. Some of them are different injuries. Some are brain injuries. Some are spinal cord injuries. A lot of different disabilities. And I sat there for about an hour and a half through the presentation the three of them did. And it was wonderful what they talked about. They were talking about all kinds of programs that are being developed and that we have in my area, and I'm sure there are other ones in other areas, and I hope there are in England something like it too, Keith. Look up Champions Made Through Adversity, I believe is the way it's pronounced. And it's people learning how to exercise and go for free, like going at like a YMCA where they've got a gym, something like that. And you get to go in there for free 2 days a week. And then on other days, they go on outings and trips and things. And I didn't know this really existed to the level it did. And they do a lot of things to help people with all different types of disabilities. And they have rock wall climbings where they help people. And they have about 60 people watching the people with disabilities find their abilities. And it was just amazing what I got to see today.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to share that because there is
Thank
hope
you.
After that. DIS ability word.
It's for your information, Les Paul. It's very easy. Champions Made From Adversity is www.cmfa.us.
Okay.
There's nothing here about Great Britain, so I guess it's not here in Britain.
I wonder if they have something similar with a different name, maybe. I just wonder. It was a wonderful presentation. They asked me if I would hand out flyers for members of our brain injury support group, and I said I will do it this week.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully that'll help a lot of people in my area that feel like Kim was talking about. Kim, you were talking about how people really did feel so down, and you felt like you went in. I know. I felt like I went inside of myself and didn't want to come out. Like I went in hiding for years.
Yes, exactly.
But I
is
did
that how you
for
felt?
A long, 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 long time.
Yeah.
I know what it's like. I lived in my my last apartment. I lived there for 25 years, and I never had visitors throughout that time.
Really?
Mm. When I say never, I mean they were so rare as to be negligible. And when I lived in that place, I was living on the second floor, which was an apartment built inside the attic, you know, the loft space. And so I couldn't see any neighbors. I couldn't see the street. I couldn't see the garden. It was so high that all I could see was the trees growing out the, and I could see the sky because the windows were above head height in the roof. And so I could see the sky, but I couldn't see the world below because of the height and because the windows were built into the sloping roof. So I could look up at the sky as much as I like, and it seemed to be pretty grey over here most of the time. And that was such a bad place to be living. This is much better because I've got this nutcase living above me. But
there you go.
I remember you saying before.
But at least I can see people around here, and I can see the street and see what's going on, which is quite different.
Well, and I think of like Jenny too. I'm not sure where she went. She said it sounds good. She must have got a computer problem because then all of a sudden she was gone. But you know, she talked about living in isolation. She must live out in the country and you know, she had never had a support group before, and until she found Brain Injury Radio, she was very isolated in her condition. And now we were talking last night about what a joy it is. She, you know,
as a
result of listening to this show and hearing Les Paul talking about independent living centers and then him helping her find one in her area, and now that person is going to be coming and picking her up, introducing her to some other survivors and going on a picnic, you know, helping her get involved in
That's
life.
That's amazing there.
It's amazing. And, you know, I got nothing against, in fact, all the respect and nothing negative about people that live in the cyber world, because they're providing an important function and a place of cyber support. But a lot of times, some people who are doing that or are participating in that a certain amount of hours a day are taken away from other parts of their life, and they're helping other people that are isolating to stay home, you know? And so, like anything, you got to strike a balance in life. You know, you don't want to be running 100% of the time, so you never have time to be still and take stock. But you also don't want to be retreating to the extent that you're not actually getting off the bench and going out into the field. And I think it's something that I know I've got to be careful of is the extremes, you know, especially since my brain injury. I feel emotions in extremes a lot of the time, or I do my actions in extremes all of the time. And Jenny also talked about that yesterday, about getting an adrenaline rush that takes her 100 miles an hour through accomplishing everything from the small to the great feats, and then boom, hits the wall and just kind of slithers down it like a spoon of Jello and plop, you know, lands there, and then takes a couple days to recover. And I know that I'm guilty of that. That's one of the things I love about Brain Injury Radio is hearing people tell their stories, and it's like looking in the mirror. And before, that was part of my isolation, was thinking I was the only one feeling these feelings.
And that's scary.
Yes, and you don't necessarily have that plasticity if you're not aware of it, you know, like Keith Anthony was talking about, because a lot of those people that don't happen into the tools, or that for one reason or another are just stuck like on that self-righteous indignation thing, or some of those emotions I was reading about, they refuse to take the actions. Well, first of all, they refuse to have the awareness that that's even where they're at. You know, and then they don't want to take the action to move out of that place, and it can be so detrimental to relationships, to physical health, to mental health.
There is a technique that I developed myself for improving the brain, which deals with plasticity. And it's just a visualization that you do, and you need to do it very frequently, as often as you can. Whenever you're not doing anything else, do this technique. And I'm doing it even as we sit here, because I can do it while I'm talking. I can do it while I'm working. It's just a thing that we need to do. We don't need to do it very hard. We doesn't need a lot of energy or focus. We just need to accept that it works and just think about it happening. So the technique is very simple. And the first thing you want to do is to accept that the concept that the brain doesn't end in the head, that the entire body is a thinking brain. So imagine that the brain doesn't just form in the head. Imagine your entire body is your brain to begin with, from the tips of your toes to the tips of your fingers and the tip of your head. And then you need to imagine something that is creating pathways. And there are lots of things that you can imagine. And you don't have to focus on it really hard. You just have to think about it just a little bit and do it often. and just picture it loosely happening to your body and your brain. So from the tips of your toes to the top of your head. And what I'm doing right now, and you don't have to do it exactly the same way. You can find your own way. But what I'm doing right now is I'm imagining that my body is filled with hundreds of octopuses. An octopus has got eight legs. Eight legs, hasn't it? So an octopus with eight legs can do a lot of searching.
Have a lot of work.
And so I'm imagining that those legs of all those octopi are sort of stretching out within my body and my brain and looking for connections. Alternatively, you might imagine that there are lots of motorways inside you and traffic driving along them, searching out for different connections. And you get the picture? You might imagine it's spaghetti. Sort of, if you're a fan of Italian
pasta. Oh, there
pasta,
you go.
Imagine you've got strands of spaghetti inside you, stretching to your fingertips and your tips of the toes and all the way through your brain, making connections and looking for new possibilities. And you can make it as funny as you like if you want to. The important thing is not so much whether it's an octopus or a road or spaghetti you're thinking of. What you're doing is giving a signal to your mind to create those neuronal pathways, because your mind knows how to do it. If we give it some kind of a metaphor to get it going. And I find that works very well with me because it makes me feel very positive when I do it. So I know it's happening. And I can do it anytime, any place, anywhere. Like the martini advert,
that's
isn't
great.
It? Anytime, any place, anywhere. They used to be great with Leonard Rosten, didn't they?
Yes.
And what was the actress? I thought Joan Collins, wasn't it? She used to be in them.
I think so, yeah.
Somebody's sending me a message. Who is that?
I give up. Who is that?
Oh, it's Diana from Australia. I've not heard from her for years. I wonder what she wants.
Well, you can find out. Bring her on. Go talk to her in a bubble and tell her she can be on Brain Injury Radio.
I think maybe it's someone who's listening to the show based on what they're saying to me. Is this Diana from Australia? I'm not sure. Yes, it is from Australia. It says up there.
That's cool.
maybe she's listening, I guess. Well, that's a surprise.
Well, type to her and
see. Yes, she's responding.
Huh.
Hmm. Yeah,
well, that's a good point. While you're figuring if she's responding or listening, or if she's just after a good time on the Skype this evening, I would just say that's another. You know, when I was starting to formulate that list at the end about all of the different things you can do to try to beat it, I know that we can be our own worst enemy. You know, sometimes based on, again, I gave that acronym about HALT, but pain is another one. You know, if you suffer from chronic pain, whether it's migraines or, you know, a lot of the other things that we hear people talk about, that adds to the fatigue. You know, it adds to the things, the external things that make us go to some of those internal places that put up those walls and make that prison. And among that list of, you know, writing and exercising and distracting and praying and, you know, certainly Keith Anthony brings up a good one when I said distract was one of them. You know, along with distract, prayer, meditation, positive visualization, you know, a relaxation visualization is going to counteract a lot of those things. The emotions I was reading were emotions that'll drive up your blood pressure, you know, and they'll get your stomach aciding and nausea, and they'll give you headaches, and it'll do all kinds of contrary physical responses to not being able to deal with emotional phenomena. And one way you can do that is not only by taking certain actions that are going to help mitigate that or give balance, but also I've benefited a lot, and I know you have too, Les Paul, from listening to Keith Anthony's show and
Absolutely.
Hearing his relaxation visualizations, because what better way to put balance to a place you're putting yourself by pumping up your blood pressure, you know, and your pulse and all of that, but to go to the other side of the coin and practice a relaxation technique,
yes,
as vigorously as you would practice not being able to shake an uncomfortable feeling. And I just did that for Keith Anthony's benefit. Instead of saying negative or positive or saying pain, I said level of discomfort. So I'm learning as I go all kinds of things, from independence center to using the word level of comfort instead of negative or pain, chronic pain, you know, chronic levels of discomfort, whether they're physical or emotional, need to be offset by something positive and affirming, and, you know, so that those prisons can't be built. But, you know, I've witnessed a lot of it in the last couple weeks, you know, in my own family. My grandma's moving in a couple days, and the siblings don't see eye to eye on how things are going to go. I'm not going to go into that story. I'm just going to say that there's a lot of those feelings that I read about that are all churning around in three different people for their own reasons, you know?
Yeah.
And those things are going to clash at some point. And it can be in any venue, you know, that's just one venue. You know, there was another with a group of friends, you know, this week, where there was some dissent and ugliness that went on. And it's not always, you know, one of the things, I think it's in the Bible somewhere, otherwise a book that I really like a lot, Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox, somewhere in there they talk about wearing life like a loose garment. And for somebody wound like a 13-day clock like me, that isn't an easy task. You know, it sounds like it should be wearing life like a loose garment, letting things,
yes,
roll off. You know, that you should be able to observe, see that that's a bunch of hockey puck, and just blow it off. But the things that hit harder than that or closer to home are usually something that feeds into a past hot button or a past emotional state that is like triggering it. So instead of just being one incident, it's like triggering dominoes out of the same box.
Okay.
And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, say when you were a child, Les Paul, you were talking about the various abuse that you took as a child. Now, if in your 50s you go into a situation where you're feeling good and positive about it, and somebody comes back and attack, you know, attacks you personally on it, and it feels abusive, you're 45 years away from that childhood feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
But the feeling is the same feeling that you had when you were a little boy in many ways.
I've met people that were very extremely negative in the past few years that brought that kind of feeling into me, reminding me of my childhood. And I said, oh, my goodness, there's someone who needs help very bad. But I react to it much differently now. I really do.
Right, right.
And go ahead.
No, go ahead. I think we're going to agree.
I was just going to say that's where learning from Brain Injury Radio, learning from all you guys, and from personal growth in all of us, as we've learned how to cope with our new coping mechanisms, and my independent living center I talk about so much, I've learned that do your best to walk away from it, do your best to, and what I meant by role reversal and things like that, it probably didn't come out right, but what I meant is when they said something negative, I would say something positive to them rather than let them, you know, someone will walk in your face and say, yeah, come on, I want to fight you now. And I'm saying, why? I don't want to fight you. I never even tried to. What's going on? hey, you want to do something? Let's go help that man across the street. No, I want
right.
to fight you. I've had people like that in my life. My father, he was actually a very good man when he wasn't very manic from medication and not brain surgeries, but he had a stroke, is what I meant to say. He had a bad stroke that added to his already lifelong bipolar, and
mm-hmm.
it made him think he was Superman. Everybody in my neighborhood thought my father was the man of the world, the Superman. I mean, he walked with a Bible in his hand. They all talked to everybody, and they called my father Preacher Morgan. And yet he would walk in the door, shut the door, and turn evil towards me or my mother or my brothers, and no one ever believed us. And so that's why I say I turned my negatives into the positives, because I would say, in my mind, I would say I'm not going to allow that to affect me
mm-hmm.
to my very best. It affected me, but I learned as I grew older that we have something inside of us that we can reach for stronger than my father, stronger than whoever it is that is beating on someone somewhere or threatening to kill them, something like that. And that they can walk away from that and get out of that violent situation. That's kind of what I meant.
Yeah, I think, you know, being able to tap into a power greater than yourself to help you get through that, you know, those kinds of situations, and, you know, like you said, practicing avoidance, and instead of walking in the middle of the tornado, taking shelter, you know, sometimes. And like you said, you grow, and if those things aren't going to swallow you and one way or another kill you, then the only way is to move forward, and you do that by learning the tools. And even if you don't pick them up that second or work them as gracefully as you do sometimes, or it takes a little longer to process than it did, the point is there are tools where none existed before, and I think that's what saves our lives. And one of the things that, like you say, I really appreciate about Brain Injury Radio, and certainly a lot of the things I've learned, because there was a lot I didn't know that I've learned in the amount of time that I've been here, from both of you and the others, that couple well with the things that I picked up along the way, you know, in other recovery programs that I was in.
Yeah.
And that's a very common, whether it's an abuse situation or an addictive situation, or even a TBI situation where they might have it coupled with PTSD, a few common elements in those three things is that secretiveness inside
yeah.
the house. It's a secret, and you're made to feel shame and disloyalty if you were to go out and tell that secret, like you would be betraying, you know,
yeah.
your family of origin. And so that helps those baby walls come up on the prison, you know, because that secrecy is there. That other feeling of not knowing whether, when someone walks in the room, if they're going to be friendly and caring and loving that day, or if you're going to be horrified by how they're going to behave, and you just don't know from day to day, and that feeling of being unsure of which side of the coin is going to come up makes you nervous. You know, you have
yeah.
a sense of free-floating anxiety all the time. Those are interestingly common in all of those situations. And when I talked about the brain injury, and we all talked about some of the isolation and the wanting to hide in the beginning before we even knew how to cope with it, we didn't want to cop to it to others if we didn't have to. And I think that kind of feeds from that same spring that'll come up in the situations for people who got groomed at a very young age to emotionally respond in one of those ways. You keep it a secret. You never let them see you sweat.
Yeah.
You know, you don't betray the secret. You certainly don't talk. And that's one of the things that we're doing opposite, and it's action opposite emotion. is another tool that I learned kind of early on in recovery, and that's that if I'm having the feeling that I better not talk about something or I'm going to be betraying or doing a bad thing by revealing something not so good that's going on in my life, then that's a fallacy, you know, a falsehood that we grew up believing was a truth. And what you find out here is that when people talk about those things, you realize that our perceptions weren't exactly right from the beginning.
Yeah. That's very true. I know perceptions change as we adapt to our new life every day. I think we wake up with a new life in the sense that we get out of bed each and every day. I've taught myself to think like that because sometimes when I wake up, you ever wake up and just think, oh, well, here's another day. We ought to think, wow, I've opened my eyes again after all I've been through, and really be thankful for the day that we've got ahead of us, even if it's a hard one. And I do think of things like that because all three of us talking right now, we could have been no longer in existence and just no more than a mere memory.
Yeah.
So I'm so thankful to know all you guys and every one of the people that call in here and the other hosts and everything, because there's many similarities and differences in the stories. And
right.
part of the reason I was talking to Jennifer so much last night is because I know she's not a host and doesn't want to try to be, but she contributes so much to the show all the time.
Yes.
And I've been hearing her grow so much and help so many people with all her different pages she has and things that I just had to talk to her for a while because, I mean, we're blessed to have her, people like her and other people that are involved with Brain Injury Radio to help, that just want to help.
Absolutely, and I think it's very important affirmations to people.
Your phone started beeping real bad.
Sorry, I walked to the tea kettle. I must have just walked off my leash on my wireless headset. I apologize out there, but you didn't hear the whistle, but I did walk out of range to pick up the kettle. So, but I think affirmations are very important. A person can buy a daily meditation book and pick it up and read an affirmation a day, and that can maybe help a little bit, but there's nothing like getting a pat on the back and an affirmation, a personal one, you know, from a person that you know who's telling you, good job. Because, you know, I think a lot of us at some time or another question whether what we're doing is making a difference. You know, and in the case that you gave, she's spending a lot of time doing a lot of writing and a lot of research. And before this independent living opportunity came, you know, there were probably times where she doubted. There's been times I've doubted, you know, in being a radio host or when I wrote my book, you know, different times where we have a little self-doubt creep in. And so I think it is important that we give each other affirmations because, again, there was another time in our lives where maybe we heard about a lot of the things we were doing wrong, but it wasn't tempered very well with the things that we were doing right. And for some reason, again, as a kid, we hang on, and I don't know why. It'll take some psychologist smarter than me, but you know, why we would hang on to and remember those, you know, those not so good things or the opposite of an affirmation, but we wouldn't remember the pats on the back that we got. So
could I come in here?
Please. I didn't know if you were done with Australia. Are you back in England?
No, she's gone. She, I was a bit confused because I thought I was thinking based on what she was saying. I was thinking she's listening to the show, but she wasn't. She was responding to something I sent to her several months ago.
Oh.
And but anyway, Norman Vincent Peale, ever heard of him?
Oh yeah. Positive thinking.
He said that in every difficult situation is potential value. Believe this, then begin looking for it. Now, that's very good, isn't it?
Very smart.
And there's another one here. Seneca said, you've heard of Seneca, haven't you?
Only the applesauce on that one.
Yeah, okay. It's a rough road that leads to the heights of greatness.
That sounds great. I certainly love it.
And this one by Robert W. Service, he says, it isn't the mountain ahead that wears you out. It's the grain of sand in your shoe.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes. Yes, indeed. So, has anyone been thinking about that visualization I suggested earlier on? That think about the parts of your body connecting with each other by imagining that there's an octopus or a road or spaghetti or just lots of strings going through your body, all connecting the different parts together. And you're giving your body and your mind an instruction then to get busy, start doing the stuff that it's supposed to do, and all the miraculous stuff that it's capable of that we haven't been able to do for maybe thousands of years because we've lost the knowledge. But when you just accept that the abilities are in your body and just start pretending that they're there and pretending you know how to do it and just imagining that it's working, the body and the brain kick in and they start making it work.
I mean, there's some amazing pieces of machinery, and I believe they're capable of healing far beyond any of us ever imagined.
Yes.
And I just want to say all of you help on that and show that to me. But Keith, you with your hypnotic recovery has really showed me, and I imagine both of you that are talking right now, that things that you never imagined would help as good as they will can help even better than that. I mean, it's mind-boggling how much you've helped me through some monstrous, painful times.
Is that helping you, Les Paul, when I'm not on the microphone with you?
Is it what now?
When I'm not here, are you still able to practice the same technique?
Yes.
To relief?
And it's still the color red, too.
Good. Fabulous. Yeah, the more you do it, the more effective it becomes. Because if you imagine, as a metaphor, as a comparison, and a fairly stinky one, I have to say, but if you imagine shoveling manure onto a pile, the bigger the pile gets, the stinker it gets, doesn't it? The more stinky. It's exactly the same when you practice self-hypnosis. The more you do it, the more powerful it gets.
Okay.
And
absolutely.
I believe it. I do.
It's an accumulative thing. It's called compounding in hypnosis. The more you do it, the more effective it becomes. It's called compounding. Just like weight training. When you start doing weight training, you're pretty weedy and you can't hardly lift anything. But after you've been doing it for a few months, you'll be lifting that 200-400 pound weight, won't you?
Yes.
That's more effective. And that's a wonderful thing. I was just wondering earlier on, Kim, when you were talking, and Les Paul, everybody who's had a serious head condition have come through difficult times and amazing recoveries, which I think we've all had to do on our own because the medical profession virtually wipe their hands of you as a nuisance the moment you come into their hospital, don't they?
Yeah, that was my experience.
My neurosurgeon has me come see him once a year, and he gives me a prescription, and I leave, and that's it. I think he has no more ideas of anything possible to do,
yes,
and it's been like that for years now.
I was wondering, with all that tremendous achievement that you made, Kim and Les Paul, and the same with me, did you ever find anyone along the way said, well done, and patted you on the back and acknowledged what a fabulous thing you've done? I bet they didn't, did they?
No.
Very rarely.
I think
a couple of times I've had people walk up to me and say, wow, man, it's nice to know you, just to know you're alive. Things like that that aren't family members. They're strangers that have heard my story. But other than that, no.
But my family have never acknowledged what I achieved with that recovery. But they're very quick to be critical, like they were when I hadn't
well,
seen them.
Well, it's their loss. It's not yours.
You're just lazy, Keith. The whole family knows it. Because I don't have a job. But no, I do actually do a lot of work. I just don't get, just haven't got a paid job as such.
Right, right. Well, I think a lot of us get accused of that, and that's where maybe the lazy and stupid wind up being tags that get put on people that have had brain injuries, particularly ones that don't have visible ones, because they've never, you know, there's that old saying about walking a mile in my moccasins, but they haven't lived a week in my brain.
Yes, indeed. My brain injury was remarkable because it was very severe, and they wanted to operate on me, but I fortunately I'd come out of the coma at this point, and I was able to indicate that I didn't want the operation, and my parents had signed the documents to release me to them against my will. I was terrified, but it's remarkable that given the amount of damage I had done in my head, that they didn't operate in the end. And I said to them, they said, you're going to die. I said, I'll take my chances, because I'd looked around me at the people they'd operated on. None of them looked very sick, and most of them weren't even there. They were wheeled out in coffins. Well, not in coffins, but on the gurney. And I'm lucky I didn't go that way, considering that, in fact, probably because I didn't let them operate on me, I put myself in God's hands, and I put myself in my own hands, and that seems to have done the trick. Thank God, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So but I was, I always think, because I know, and I've more recently with MRIs seen the level of damage in my brain, and it's incredible that because where all the damage that has been done to my brain. Is the areas that allow me that would stop me from doing the things that I'm clearly doing, like talking. I shouldn't be able to speak with the area that was damaged, and I should be blind. I imagine I'm certainly paralyzed, and because it's all the frontal part of my brain, and I forget the names of it now, but down the sides of my brain as well. And it's remarkable to me that, which is one of the reasons why I formulated this idea that our cognition, our mind, such as it is, exists outside of our body, and I really do latch on to this idea of the plasticity and making new connections by imagining anything that gives you the idea of flow going through your body. You've got to get a flow going into through your body to make all those connections. Does that make sense to you, Les Paul?
Yes,
it does make sense. Hey, Keith Anthony, I got a question / favor, maybe. I've got 15 minutes left in the show, which is fine with me. I was going to read a couple of prayers, one of which you liked before, but I was going to say whether you guys were staying or not, if you had the capability of being able to extend the show for 30 minutes, I'd play music for 30 minutes, even if you guys weren't staying, because you know how to do that magic trick while people are online. If you can't, that's okay too, but I'd ask.
I'd have to log in to do it.
Can you log in as co-host?
Yes, I imagine so. You want time extended, okay? Hold on, where are we? Where's the page? Oh, here it is.
If you can find it, and if we get out
first of all, then log back in.
Okay, you got 10 minutes to do it, so I'll read a prayer while you're doing that.
All right, I won't. Actually, I will be out of here because I'm on Skype, so I'll log out from there. Click the button, log out,
okay.
Log back in as Les Paul, I guess. why is that funny?
I'm on the screen. It just sounds funny. You're logging in as me. Help! You're taking me over.
Oh, sorry. No, Les Paul. Not Craig is the one I mean. Craig.
Oh, okay.
Right. I was gonna say that's funny. Well, I was gonna talk about one of the things that I talked about was prayer, and we don't talk about that a lot. But since I've got just 10 minutes maybe left in this show before I start playing some music, One of the prayers I read the other night, and Keith Anthony liked this, was, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. Amen. May I do thy will always. And then I have a little ritual that I do, a morning prayer and a nighttime prayer. And in the morning, I want to ask God to direct my thinking. And in the evening, I want to kind of survey my day and see where my defects of character might have interrupted, or something during the day could have happened more smoothly. So the morning prayer is, God, direct my thinking today so that it be divorced of self-pity, dishonesty, self-will, self-seeking, and fear. God, inspire my thinking, decisions, and intuitions. Help me to relax and take it easy. Free me from doubt and indecision. Guide me through this day and show me my next step. God, give me what I need to take care of any problems. I ask all these things that I may be of maximum service to you and to my fellows. Amen. And so,
amen to that.
I say that in the morning to direct my thinking, and then at night, I say, God, forgive me where I have been resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid today. Help me not keep anything to myself, but to discuss it all openly with another person. Show me where I owe an apology and help me make it. Help me be kind and loving to all people. Use me in the mainstream of life, God. Remove worry, remorse, or morbid, sick reflections, that I may be of usefulness to others. Amen.
That was great. I love that.
And so the morning prayer, the evening prayer, and then the God, I offer myself to thee. That's another prayer that I do frequently. And sometimes I have to remember, in that ego part I was talking about, that acronym, easing God out, that, you know, God didn't save me, at least in my opinion. These are all my opinions on my show. Take what you like, leave the rest. But when I'm easing God out, that means that I'm playing God myself. And so one of the prayers that I also say, a short one, is, God, help me become willing to sweep away the debris of self-will and self-reliant living. Thy will be done for this person as well as for me. And then on resentments that I talked about earlier, see, I've got a prayer that helps me with each of those prisoner feelings. Someone told me early on that if I had an anger or a resentment towards someone, that I was to get on my knees, not just do it in the car or while I'm in the tub, but to get on my knees every morning and pray for that person. And sometimes I strongly recoiled against that idea or that person, or I felt they were more wrong than I was, and I had that self-righteousness.
Kim, could I stop you, please?
Yes.
I've been in, and because we've gone into extra time, it's not quite so simple, but I've increased the amount of time, fortunately, because I normally had to go into the archived show, and I was able to increase the time there, and it's showing me on the main page now that it's live, waiting for the host to call in.
Oh.
So, are you on Skype, or how have you called in?
Yes, I am. I'm on Skype. Mm-hmm. So we haven't ended. That must mean the show is still going. What I will do is...
Maybe that the extra time will carry on. I can't swear it, but we'll find out in 5 minutes.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'll kind of do a regular close again with some accolades, just in case it doesn't work out. But I'm sorry, Keith Anthony, I forgot we were in overtime, or I wouldn't have even asked you to do that. I know that would be different. I wasn't even remembering. I remembered I scheduled the show for an hour, but then we did go into overtime. I had been scheduling my shows longer, but to be honest with you, I've kind of hit the wall like what Jenny was talking about, and I thought that an hour would be good enough, but at this time, but I don't usually.
It's telling me that the stream connector, I've not seen that up there before, but the on air is saying stream connecting 1 hour, 4 minutes, and 33 seconds. So, and there's a red button here that says end episode, so that would suggest the episode is still running.
Yes.
So I'm not quite sure, and I can see the three of us are on the switchboard here.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what's going to happen in a few minutes from now, but we'll find out, I guess. So I've increased the length of the show to 3 hours total, just to be safe. And so I don't know whether it's carry on.
Well, you can probably just close it down when you want to that way.
But I'm in here as
co-host.
Well, no, you can't choose host or co-host unless you open up the chat.
Oh, okay.
And so, so that would suggest to me that lots of people could log into this switchboard at the same time, and you don't get problems, I would suppose, unless you tried to open the chat up, in which case you.
Well, actually, we did, and it doesn't matter since there's only a few of us. But it says another user is logged in using this account. You are disconnected. So
that's because you are in the chat, yeah.
It did kick me off the chat, but that's okay because just know I'm not watching the chat because we're all on the call together. But now we know that, yes, that's one of the things that we were saying in those deals is that this has happened to all of us before, and I asked you to, so it's not about you. But there's a lot of people we have not asked to do, and we wind up while we're live at the beginning of our show.
Because we're doing a great job.
Yeah, getting kicked out. So that's why I want to. Well, I won't have to reiterate here, but that's one of the reasons why I brought up to people to make sure that the only time they use the host, I'll just say the host login information is on the day of their own show, and if they're scheduling, you know, their own show. You know, during the daytime or sometime after our live hours, because this is exactly the kind of thing that happens. And I'm actually really glad we did it this way because I asked you to, and there were only three of us here.
I think what we need to do is if you want to have a co-host, it is that you must both log in before the show goes live. Then this kind of issue won't happen. It's because we've logged in after the show's gone live. That's when the issues are. So I'm thinking, because if you're going to have a host and a co-host, there must be a method for you to get in without kicking the other one out. So it must be that you both have to log in before the show goes live, and then you'll be okay, I suppose.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're
right.
Except
you're going to get kicked out, and so you know that if you ask me to log in, then you have to assume that you're going to get kicked out of the chat. It's just a matter of you launching the chat again, which takes moments, which is not annoying if you know who did it, is it? But we shouldn't be talking shop, as we've discussed on the line, because the people calling, people listening, want to be hearing more meaningful stuff.
Absolutely. So, well, I just got done with the praying, and we've got like 4 minutes. I think what I will do for the 4 minutes, just to see if this worked and make sure, is, let's see, I've got a song that's 3 minutes and 38 seconds. So,
just in case it carries on.
I'm sorry?
But when the track is finished, don't hang up. Just stay here.
No, I will. Yeah, everybody can stay if they want, and then everybody's free to go if they need to go to bed or don't want to hang around. I'm just going to play music for a while if it works. But I will take this moment, so stick around if you want to. But
it's only 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, what the heck. This song is, well, actually, I don't even have to do that. I really only have a couple of minutes, but I will say again, thank you to our sponsor, Gordon Johnson of TBILaw.com. I will also remind you to check out the peer group support line. That's the number 4, P as in Paul, E as in Edward, E as in Edward, R as in Ralph, 44.org. 1peer44.org. You can read about the new 24-hour peer support hotline that we're working on. It presently has hours 7 days a week, but we're not quite up to the 24 because we're looking for volunteers. If you're willing to volunteer 4 hours a month to reach out and help another survivor, then check out that site and volunteer to go through the training. And I want to thank the audience that's listened tonight and all of you guys that Les Paul and Keith Anthony, who stayed to hang out with me in overtime, and anybody who is here at the show, online or off. I appreciate you being here. And I think what I'll do, just to tickle Les Paul a minute, is I've got about a minute. We'll see if we last.
I think your show is okay, Kim, because it's showing me here that there's 58 minutes left, and we've gone past the top of the hour, and we're still talking. So
and
that
according to my clock, it's already 12.
For another hour.
Oh, good. Well, okay, far out. Well, that still means I'm going to give a minute and 32 seconds to one of our hosts, only because I haven't found one with the other name. But now, who could be a minute and 32 seconds? Let's name that artist.
Les Paul.
Sorry Now by Les Paul. Never stopped during that, did it, Les Paul?
No.
No, and you didn't hear us talking to each other privately, did you?
Yes.
You did? Oh. I thought those yellow buttons were so you could speak to people without it going on air.
We're practicing the bubble. Now, let me ask you something. I know, yeah, whatever, we don't have any rules right now in Brain Injury Radio, so except soliciting each other's guests. So, Les Paul, please don't hit on Keith Anthony and vice versa. But
well, first, I just got to say thank you for playing my guitar playing. I'm just playing.
Yeah,
the original Les Paul. He was a genius. He was.
Is that Les Paul you're playing?
That was Les Paul called Who's Sorry Now? I got another Les Paul in there I'll play later. But
I mean, was it a Les Paul guitar that you were playing, Les Paul?
Say that again.
No, it was
using a Les Paul style guitar.
That was Les Paul himself playing.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. But are you using a Les Paul guitar?
I have a Les Paul.
He has one.
Okay, right.
Yes.
It took him a long time to collect it. Now go back to your other point while I play another song and you try it with Les Paul. But I want to know first, did you like click on your bubble and then my bubble?
I clicked them both.
Okay, so you did it each. try to bubble.
You have to put them both on. You need mine on and yours on in order for us to talk to each other. And if I put all three of them on, I would assume that the three of us would be able to talk privately without anyone listening in.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a song that is... I'm going to play one more Les Paul song that's a minute 49 seconds. That'll give you long enough to... Well, I'll wait for Les Paul. I won't do that. Let me pick another song real quick that I'll play. Don't take me, because I want to be able to tell if I can hear you guys, like what he said.
All right. Okay.
So here's a song that is 2 minutes and 47 seconds by the wonderful Nick Johnson, who I got to meet. Some of you saw a picture posted on Brain Injury Radio of he and I when I met him here in Omaha. This is called This Weight Coming Down. It's a 2 minute and 47 second song. Get off. And that was Nick Johnson with This Weight Coming Down. A great guy, native of the Nebraska area, and check him out at iTunes, Nick Johnson, and it's N-I-C, no K on it, N-I-C-J-O-H-N-S-O-N, Nick Johnson. He's wonderful. I'm going to be hearing him play again live for my second time coming up in a couple weeks. And it happens to be at the coffee shop where my husband and I met for our first date. So that will be pretty awesome. The next song I'm going to play for you, you guys have heard me play my outro, is by Leah West, leahwest.com. This particular song I'm going to play is also by Leah West. It doesn't get played quite as often, but it kind of goes along with our theme tonight. The song is 4 minutes and 12 seconds. It looks like my folks left on the board are doing a tutorial that has been successful, and I'm really happy to have that experience and know how that works. But this is Leah West with I'm Not Invincible. So get a spot of tea or visit the loo, as our English co-host would say. And this is I'm Not Invincible. And that was Leah West with I'm Not Invincible, a beautiful song, I think, like most
beautiful.
Of Leah's. Very nice. Check her out at leahwest.com. She was starting to be an emerging artist right about the time my book came out, and she has taken off like a rocket. And she's from Canada and also speaks French. And one of these days on my webpage, she just came out with the new music video, and she's a beautiful girl where she's singing the song in French. And so it's kind of a cool deal. I'll have to post that for Leah.
She's great.
She's really a great gal, and I've offered to have her come on the show, and she's been willing to do that. And in the meantime, she just got back from, I think it was Africa, where they did one music video, and then she just finished up doing this one in French. And
wow.
It's very beautiful. So tomorrow, if I have time, I'll look for that on her site, and I'll post it on mine and give her a little extra press for those that like to hear people singing in French. It's cool. You know, she does a really good job, obviously, singing in English, but also a very good job in that French Canadian of hers. So that's pretty cool. One thing I'm going to do before we do our other experiment, Keith Anthony, is my one other that I have on here. I thought I had three, but I'm only seeing two, and that's revisiting As Long As He's Here in his honor, Out of Nowhere. That was the great Les Paul, Out of Nowhere. I actually found the third one. We'll play that in a little while. Did you notice, like, in the older days, a lot of the songs were a lot shorter, a minute something.
Yeah.
You know, 2 minutes something. I think the longest one I have of him is the third one I haven't played, and it's like 2 minutes and 57 seconds. So they got a little wordier in later generations, I think. But that was the great Les Paul, and our Tuesday night host is Les Paul, and he owns a Les Paul that he coveted for many years until he was finally able to land the prize of his namesake.
It took me forever to get it. And if it wasn't for a man that used to work with me at Walton Options, and he said, "So you want a Les Paul one day?" to me. He said, "You want a really nice one?" And I said, "Don't kid with me about that. I've talked to you about wanting a Les Paul so bad." And his wife invited me over to their house, and they sold me an extraordinary Les Paul for a lower price than what it's worth. And it's
wow.
Beautiful. It's a 1970. I think it's made in 1977. It's called a
wow.
Les Paul 2550. It was the 25th. Anniversary of the Les Paul guitar, and the 50th anniversary of Les Paul performing. And so it's a
wow.
custom, it's Les Paul 2550. If you look it up, you'll see it's a special guitar. And he sold
wow,
that,
that was really cool of them to do, wasn't it?
It's extremely unique guitar. I love it.
Wow, that's really fabulous. Well, it's cool. And Keith Anthony, as soon as you find a wonderful musician named Keith Anthony, I'll be happy to add that to the playlist. Now, where are you going to find that? We're going to have to start Googling Keith Anthony musicians. We may or may not find those, I guess.
There is a Keith Anthony musician out there.
There is?
There's also a Keith Anthony comedian out there.
Is it you? Wait a minute.
It's not me. No, it's not me.
I bet there is.
God,
not
we're
me.
Going to have to Google that and find
I'm
that.
I'm not
musician.
Funny at all.
Well, okay. You can be funny. I've heard you be
you
funny before.
You have made us laugh many times.
But I was talking about the musician, in spite of the fact that you can be funny sometimes.
Well, that's not me being funny. That's just me being myself, and people find that funny. I find it very humiliating myself, but never mind.
Oh, no. We don't mean in a bad way.
I'm joking with you. I'm joking.
You're such a prankster.
I know.
Right now we're going to do the experiment. Some of you remember my guest a while back, Dale. Dale married to Deb, who was an unfortunate victim of the Medicaid system and wound up in a nursing home not being treated after an aneurysm for the last 7.5 years. That was a really bad story. If you want to hear that story sometime, it is in the archive of my shows titled Garfan, G-A-R-F-A-N. Check out their website at garfan.com. It's G-A-R-F-A-N.com. This is a song called Tell Me, 3 minutes and 52 seconds.
I've often heard it said, the truth will set you free. So I got to show the truth that lies in me.
Thank you.
star fan with Tell Me. I noticed one of the many things when we're talking about tools of recovery, they have to do with expression. Whether you're expressing yourself through writing, you're expressing yourself through talking, or you're expressing yourself through singing. A lot of times there's things in songs that can pull from deep inside of us, out of our heart and soul, and we can find a relatability in the experiences that others have put to music, whether it's the lyrics that resonate with us or the melody that resonates with us. Music has been proven to be an effective form of therapy for many kinds of brain injuries that people have suffered. And so in this bit of overtime, extra time that Keith Anthony, another host, was able to add on to my show tonight, for those of you that are listening, I've got probably about another half hour of music. If you haven't left already, then just know you're sitting around and hearing some jams for this last hour. The beginning of the show was My Own Prison. The middle hour was about other people's experience and comments on my show, My Own Prison. And this last hour will be music therapy, where you can hear some of these new emerging artists who've been kind enough to share their music with us in support of Brain Injury Radio, as well as us hearing their music. There's no doubt about that. But of all of the musicians that I contacted, these musicians were really believers in our cause. They want to support our movement, and they were very pleased to let us play their music on our radio. So to them, I am most grateful. I think I'll send one out to Jennifer now, who isn't listening, but may wind up picking it up in the archive. And that is one of her favorite boot scooting songs by the Hard Times Band. And this is called You're Never Alone, 3 minutes and 27 seconds.
ever long. I close my eyes. You're right where you belong. You're never alone, even when I'm called away from home. I'll keep you with me even when I'm gone. So you're never alone. No, you're never alone.
Okay, that was Never Alone by the Hard Times Band. I think we'll go right into something people like to hear, or I get a lot of requests for it anyway, my outro by Leo West called Guardian Angel. You guys usually hear the last 51 seconds as I close my show with her, but I'm going to go ahead tonight and play the whole song. I'm feeling bad because it's April. We had a couple of great spring days, and I'm going to try to keep my spirits up, but we're going to be having 1 to 3 inches of snow tonight. Had a big hailstorm last night, and it ain't feeling much like spring. So I'm going to focus on something positive, and that's something that I believe we all have. And when she uses the word mother, you can picture it as a literal mother, but I look at God, the God of my understanding, is having both feminine and masculine characteristics. And I look at the word mother in this song in terms of a universal spiritual mother. So as you listen to the tune, ponder that. 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Thank you. And that was the full version of the lovely song by beautiful Leah West, Guardian Angel. And I hope that you enjoyed that song. We've got, I think about 25 minutes left. I'll bring the boys back on in a few minutes. They're doing a practice exercise tonight while I am playing tunes. Let's see, where's that new fella? We've got a couple new people on the board that I really like a lot. You know, but one of them, actually, I'm going to back up before I get to a couple of our new artists, and I'm going to play another one that is one of my more requested songs, and it turned out to be one of those that also has a brain injury, and I didn't know it when I was looking for music. It was something I found out afterward, like with Dale from Garfan. This is a fella named John Cruz, and he had a band, John Cruz Blues. He's no longer active. He is on Facebook, John Cruz, but does not have a website. They don't actively have a band now, which is a darn shame. But he has started with a very long series of radiation treatments when they discovered in the last couple of months that he has a tumor resting on his brainstem. And these treatments aren't even really designed to get rid of the tumor. It's inoperable, but it's designed to help the tumor not grow so that it doesn't affect so many areas that the brain tumor impacts. So please send your prayers up to John Cruz tonight of John Cruz Blues, that he makes it through this radiation therapy, this long regime that he's got to go through, and that it does stop the growth with the least amount of damage possible of that brain tumor. This is 5 minutes and 33 seconds of a song called Palm of Your Hand by John Cruz. Thank you. Sorry about that. That was The Palm of Your Hand by John Cruise, John Cruise Blues. We've got about 14 minutes left in the show, so I'm just going to now, I will look for a couple of those new artists that we had. Sorry about the sound gap there. We had a moment of technical difficulty. Surprise, surprise. At least that didn't happen in the earlier part of the show. This song is also been a favorite lately. The newest in our panel of new musicians. And this is Arrows and Sound. And you can check them out at arrowsandsound.com or check them out on iTunes. This song is 3 minutes and 38 seconds, and it's called What If. Couple of different CDs. Philip is the name, well, I won't say, but Phil is the name of the lead, the person who produces this music, and the owner of the music, and check out arrowsandsound.com or go to iTunes and look for Arrows and Sound, and they have a number of great songs. I'm hoping that he is going to be a guest on the show one of these nights, and soon I'll be uploading some other selections of his, so hopefully you like his music and you'll be hearing more of it. The other one, the second to the newest entry that we have in our new lineup of musicians is Francis. Where is he? Yes, this song is called Beautiful, and it's by Francis Jones and the Saviors. I love these guys. Check out Francis Jones and the Saviors at iTunes, and you'll be able to hear some of their music. Beautiful music. These guys are from Jersey. So here's 3 minutes and 38 seconds of Beautiful by Francis Jones and the Saviors.
You can't come to me, I will understand. Sometimes the things that shouldn't be are your only plans. And if you get scared, I will protect you. But don't expect an easy life. Nobody has ever got that right. And you can go away from me, I will understand. Sometimes the love that you believe is not the love that's in your hands. And if you get scared, I will protect you. But don't expect an easy life. Nobody has ever got that right. But it will be beautiful.
Francis Jones and the Saviors. Check them out. They make some beautiful music. Again, the Jersey Boys, Francis Jones, and the Saviors. Pardon me, I'm getting a frog in my throat, and it's because we're coming up on the end of the show. We've got just a few minutes left. I'm going to thank our sponsor again, Gordon Johnson at tbilaw.com. Going to thank all of you loyal listeners that we appreciate, the survivors that we can relate to, share our stories with, and glean our experience, strength, and hope. I want to thank all of you who listen to my show. I really appreciate that. And thank Craig Cecilia for creating Brain Injury Radio on 7 nights a week and the new peer group support line, which you'll be hearing more and more about. I'm going to close my show tonight with one more song, and the show will be over after that. This is a lovely song by Lily Kershaw, 3 minutes. It's called As It Seems. I want you all to have a good evening and many blessings. Thanks so much for being here. Again, Lily Kershaw, As It Seems. Have a great day tomorrow.
Well, I knew what I didn't want to know, and I saw where I didn't want to go, so I took the path less traveled on, and I let my stories be whispered when I'm gone. When I'm gone. When I'm gone. When I'm gone. Well, in this life, you must find something to live for. 'Cause when the darkness comes a-calling, you go back to where you were before. 'Cause this life is as fragile as a dream, and nothing's ever really as it seems. As it seems. As it seems.
Everybody, thanks so much for being here, and you have a good rest of the week. Good night.